This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of April 19th. I'm John Gibson, and with me at a decent hour, loving this, on a Sunday night, is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm decent.
Thank goodness.
I'm not decent. Okay. Well, it doesn't work.
I bet you say that to all the guys.
Well, not on Sundays, no.
Not on Sundays. That's the day you're going to choose to take off, huh? All right. Good.
Got to give it a rest sometimes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, sometimes you say.
I have no idea where that what that means, but let's go.
Let's move on. All right, people. I got a new saying, mask up and hunker down. Mask up and hunker down. So let's stay safe. Just think about other people and yourself. And again, take some time. Go to iTunes, rate and review and follow us. We need that pod cred, as Jim called it. I'm still loving that, too, as well. All right, on this week's show, we've got the introductory presser featuring Justin Smoke and Eric Thames of Yomiuri. We're going to talk about the Giants a little bit, look at the Masahiro Tanaka, Ma-kun losing return to NPB. We're going to look at some good, some bad, and some fugly, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so no smoke and mirrors here. We just got Justin Smoke and Eric Thames, I guess the two newest big name players in NPB, and they had press availability on Tuesday. I was able to obtain the audio from that. Justin Smoke, guy who has played in the big leagues, I think 11 seasons. Eric Thames has 6 seasons of major league experience. I actually wrote a story that's in the Japan News today. So if you're out and about and you're listening to the show, pick up the Japan News and check out that story. Smoke really has some scary power. I think if he makes good contact and he's able to make consistent contact in Japan, he's going to be tremendously successful. But I'm sure, as Jim can tell you, that has been the problem for a lot of guys who come over here, is making consistent contact. And Thames, he had some real good stretches, or one good stretch in the KBO in Korea, and he also took it to the majors in for a season, which I think he had the first half of the season he was really good. I think the numbers kind of said that
I think it was his second season. I think he broke his thumb like in May. And basically, from the time he showed up in MLB, showed up back in MLB until he hurt his thumb. And at that point, and then after about a year, whenever he was fit again, he looked exactly like the player he was in Korea.
Yeah.
So basically, when he didn't have a broken thumb, he was really good.
Yeah. And he has already shown the ability to play well in Asia. So I anticipate that he'll be able to make the adjustment. Both guys are 34. Smoke is listed as an infielder, Thames as an outfielder. I can imagine that the Giants will plug him in those spots, such as Smoke at probably first base, Thames probably left field, right field. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. Just get him in the lineup, I think. So the one thing I noticed when I looked up Eric Thames, and I looked up their ages, and I noticed that Eric Thames is born on November 10th. That's the same birthday as the Wonder Twins. So my twins and his birthday. Yeah, and Eric Thames share a birthday. So I understand they're supposed to be activated maybe as early as this week on the top team. So if you're listening on Monday, again, expect to see them on Tuesday sometime. But anyway, here they are in order of appearance and alphabetical order. And keep in mind that Justin speaks first on the questions, and Eric Thames comes in afterward. And I chopped out the Japanese because the questions are pretty much obvious. When you listen to the answers, you can figure out what the questions were. But they didn't actually clearly translate the questions so that we could get it on tape. But no surprises here. You know, same kind of question. I think, Jim, before the show, what did you say?
That we could probably do a one size fits all new imported player press conference. I could do that. I'm gonna have to do that for the blog this week, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. Because the questions are pretty much similar. What are your goals? What are your expectations? How do you describe yourself as a hitter? All these kinds of things. So it's pretty fun. So here's, again, Justin speaks first, and then Eric Thames follows, always answering the same questions. So here they are.
Thank you, first and foremost.
Now, but yeah, I play
playing with a few Japanese players in the States, and they're always very, I guess, dedicated, very, you know, practice a lot, and very serious about the game of baseball. And so that's something that, you know, on the, you know, it's just cool seeing, like, the way we think about it in the States, the way they do it here in Tokyo. So, you know, excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, you know, we've been in the hotel for 2 weeks, so I haven't really been able to go out and kind of see what the city's about so far. But, you know, like, all I really care about is going to get some good food. There's some great restaurants around here. We're fortunate to be in Tokyo, so there's a lot of stuff out here. So I'm ready to eat some Kobe beef and some fatty tuna, all that. So, as you can tell, I like to eat, so... I've played with a lot of Japanese players, and seeing like the style of play, you know, the contact, like pitchers, like a lot of split, a lot of curveball, stuff like that. It's a lot more of a science. It's not like America where it's just hit the ball as far as you can or throw as hard as you can. But here it's more of like an art. So just getting used to like that style of play is a big thing for us, and you know, I think that we'll be fine.
All right, that was short and sweet. I like that part. And no bar is being set by either player in terms of goals, but what stuck with you after you listened to this?
So pretty routine stuff. Both said they're aware of the difference in Japan, and they mentioned that learning about how the game is different, and that's important, but everybody kind of says that. You know, you never get a guy who comes in and says, well, you know, it's... They say this on the field. Oh yeah, well it's baseball, so it's not any different.
I'm going to tear this league up. You never hear that.
Wayne Grasek used to have a story about that. A guy came in and he said, "I've seen these pitchers. I'm going to steal 50 bases this year." And Wayne said, "I think he finished with 3." And when Wayne asked him about it, he says, "Well, nobody told me they can do balk moves here."
There you go. you said you've seen the pitchers, so you're the one who said the 50.
Nobody exactly. So,
love it.
You rarely hear that, but you do hear, especially with, you know, the so much information now about Japan that was not available 20, 30 years ago.
Mm.
Everybody, you know, they both talked about the Japanese players they've played with and guys who've played in Japan. And of course, Eric Thames played in Korea and did very, very well there. And I guess the very subtle thing he said is, I consider myself or my adaptability a strong point. And I would have to say, you think? Because here's a guy who basically had no future in MLB, and he goes to Korea and he just, you know, he became the player some scouts saw in the States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he projected his future and
signed
that mega contract with the Milwaukee Brewers that got people's eyes rolling. And he was pretty good. Like I said, he basically, I believe it was a thumb injury that wiped out about a half a season. And other than that one half season when he didn't particularly play well, he was dead on a guy who really hit for good power and had a good on base percentage. They're both, basically low average sluggers.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that, but it was pretty routine stuff. Nothing stood out in the interview. How about you?
I think Justin Smoke's saying that staying healthy is the key. And that's a huge part of it. I thought he made a good point about starting the season delayed, basically. Those guys have to hit the ground running. And so I thought that was a good point, because we don't think about that. We just expect, you know, just like with the Bay Stars getting Neftali Soto and Tyler Austin back this past week, and we thought, okay, well, the home runs are good to just follow. And they just haven't yet. Soto hit one today, but he threw the bat. I mean, I could tell he was frustrated a little bit having not hit one until today. But it just doesn't come that quickly. So hitting the ground running, I thought was a big point from Justin Smoke. And then I must say, I have really liked Eric Thames since that big year that he had back in the big leagues after all kinds of success in the KBO. And he was hitting all these home runs and people were talking about, well, this must be drug related. We're going to have to, there was talk of him being tested. And I think it was ESPN I saw it on. And he says, well, I think he was standing in front of his locker. He says, well, I have no problem taking any kind of drug tests. I have plenty of urine. And I just thought, this guy is cool.
He is good.
You can tell he speaks eloquently in the interview anyway, but I think him saying that at the very end, he snuck us, we always get a backdoor slider from these position players. I don't know what it is, but he said that playing here in Japan, baseball is more like an art. I just thought that was frame worthy. I thought, put that in a frame, like, a home is where the heart is or something like that, and put it up on a wall, because that really, guys throw as hard as they can, guys swing as hard as they can, none of that stuff. It's more like an art here. And I thought that was really, really profound, really liked it. And I think he understands. I mean, I would anticipate that he'll have a quicker transition period where he just understands what Asian pitchers or, Japanese kind of style or the thinking is going to be. But, it's all about making contact. It really doesn't matter how you get the bat on the ball is that you get the bat on the ball. So, but it just seems like Eric Thames is going to be able to make the adjustments sooner than later. But I really, really, really liked to hearing that phrasing. And it just brought me back to, the situation that people talk about, that Japanese teams play baseball differently and blah, blah, blah. And here's a guy, I think he's just going to be able to understand it. He's going to get it. So loved it. And so, again, like you said, there's garden variety press conference stuff. I don't think there was anything that shocking in there. Neither guy was willing. And I think it's smart on their part to say, hey, look, I'm not going to give you any goals. I'm not going to put up these numbers for you to compare me to at the end of the season. Both guys basically said, if we play and if we're healthy and if we do the things that we're supposed to do, the results will follow. And, very standard stuff. So it was good to hear it, though.
I had a brief conversation with Eric Thames in March 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked it, how was it playing in South Korea, because Japan's fan culture is not unique to Japan. I mean, it is unique in some ways, but it's very similar to what they have in Taiwan and what they have in South Korea. Asian baseball cheering culture is radically different from what you get in the majors. And he said, it took me a little while, but I learned how to tune it out. He wasn't a big fan of the noise.
You mean the fans?
Yes, yes.
And the music and the
chanting and all that. Yep.
Okay.
Of course, many guys say I don't really hear it when I'm in the game, when I'm concentrating, but most of them say, they really dig the atmosphere, and he was sort of, I got over it.
Yeah, and I remember last year when they were playing games in front of no crowd, I was saying all these years that these veteran players have been learning to tune out that noise. Now there's nothing to tune out, and it's just different. But I think they made the adjustment. I mean, the benches were making a lot of noise, that's for sure. So they were having – it just was different without the bands and the music and – all the other ambient noise that goes on during, or loud ambient noise that goes on during a game. Yeah. But really fun. All right, well, let's talk about the Giants really quickly. Now, they're good. They're doing well. They're in second place. They're off to an 11-6 start. They're just getting overshadowed by the Hanshin Tigers and their strong start. But although Ruby De La Rosa was removed from the roster to handle some citizenship procedures back in the States.
I believe he's completing his U.S. citizenship.
Yeah, so he's out indefinitely. I don't think there was a date.
Well,
on
when he comes back, he's going to have to quarantine, so he's going to be missing a month at least.
Yeah, at least, yeah. And I remember the Dragons' Diane Vicieto was absent for an extended stretch when he was doing a similar thing. Was that 2017 or 18 or something like that?
And something like that.
Yeah, he was gone for quite a long time, so I hope it doesn't end up being like that for De La Rosa. But the guy I really want to talk about with the Giants is Hayato Sakamoto, and I think it's time to really just acknowledge that what we're seeing here in this player, because Friday he played in game number 1778 mm-hmm. at shortstop, and that broke Takashi Toritani's record for games at shortstop in NPB. I believe it was NPB, right?
That is correct.
Okay. And although Toritani is still active with the Lotte Marines now, so he has a chance to add to his total, but I'm just seeing that Sakamoto is obviously an everyday player, and so now Toritani is going to be chasing a starter, so that really doesn't favor him. But the week before Sakamoto reached, or he notched his 165th game of three or more hits in a game, he's already got his 2,000 hits. He's climbing up the record books on all the, you know, games played, three-hit games. He's hit a bunch of home runs. He's just building this Hall of Fame resume that just won't be denied. And he's the captain. He's the shortstop of the Giants. The only thing we don't have to worry about is him getting any kind of home run record. So all you Giants hating fans can revel in that, I suppose, because it'll always be. I mean, nobody's going to break O's record, so always be a Giant. But he's a good defensive player, borderline great defensive player, certainly declining since his age 30 season, but still really good. So I just wanted to appreciate what we're seeing here, because he really is a top-notch player.
Yeah, he is. And of course, I don't know. You hear different comments about his ability, you know, his ability if he were to play in the States, and some, oh, he'd never make it, and that's why he knows he doesn't go, and a lot of the scouts think he would be able to go. But I think in the end, you know, I don't really care about that, because I think he just decided that his future, the best thing for his future was to stay in Japan. And I mean, I have a lot of respect for his decision to say to, and without casting aspirations on it, which is kind of the hard thing, because so often baseball is used as kind of a, you know, your decisions in baseball or your skills in baseball are often used as a sort of moral, you know, a moral compass for outsiders to look into your character and, you know, and say what you're lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Or what you know, what you have that others don't have. And I've heard people say, well, Sakamoto, you know, lacks this and he lacks that, or he know he's going to America because he know he would fail. And I just think that's so overplaying it. You know, he made a decision based on what's best for him. And why can't we just leave it at that? I mean, I don't know the answer to, you know, what's best for him. I certainly think he knows better than I do. Not about many things, but in terms of his own career, 100%. I certainly agree. Sakamoto is just amazing. And I love that they can bat him second, because he's not the power hitter. They can bat him second without casting aspersions on, you know, it being an insult to that player for batting such a good player second.
Yeah, I don't have any trouble. You can bat him anywhere before, you know, fifth or even fifth. I don't think it's a bad idea to have him get him more at bats, but he's just so productive in that. You know, he doesn't fear any pitcher. He just goes up there with so much confidence.
And right.
Josh Whitesell said last week is some guys don't have all the right mechanics or anything, but they're so strong with the mental game. I love the way he said that last week. And so I think Sakamoto is way up there in the mental game.
Yeah, I think in last Japan series, we saw the Giants batters really struggling to get good swings on the Hawks pitchers. And really, Sakamoto was the exception. He looked really comfortable. I don't know if he looked comfortable, but he looked like you know, I'm game. And he does have the ability to make, he had the ability to make the adjustments to a little different level. And he put a lot of good swings on balls, and that was pretty rare for the Giants in that series.
Really good player. You have anything to say about their pitching or anything else or hitting? Or the young players have really been, I've just been surprised at how their young players have been able to fill in, and all the guys they seem to be bringing up and putting in games are producing and hitting with some power and just helping them win games. They should have swept, it could have swept, let's put it that way, the Bay Stars in Yokohama this weekend, but couldn't muster up enough offense on Sunday. But the other 2 days, they got production from just about everybody and won those games fairly easily.
Yeah, I think the trademark, and it's ironic because, and it's also, there's a few ironies in there. Basically, the Giants' strength right now is their star, has this season has been their starting pitching and their power.
Mm-hmm.
Adding more power, as in Justin Smoke and Eric Thames, seems like it's probably, especially, it's a small, it's not really where they're weak. Of course, they're not really weak anywhere. But I think the irony is that they're starting pitching. They went through a 10-day period where their starting pitching was just outstanding. And here we've got a team that during the Japan series basically abandoned the idea of using, you know, five starters and mm-hmm. went to two starters and bullpen days.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a good sign if you're a Giants fan. Oh, like they've rediscovered, you know, starting pitching. So that's kind of interesting. Another thing I'm interested in is, you know, we mentioned Ruby De La Rosa going back to the States, but the guy who's really impressed me is Thiago Vieira.
Mm.
Just really different from what we saw last year. What we saw last year was sort of version of what we saw in the States from him, a guy who could throw the ball at the speed of sound, but without any sort of guidance.
Right. But yeah, he had no idea where it was going. And
yeah, it's like, exactly. And so his strikeouts are quite a bit down this year. I mean, you know, like, three quarters of what they were over his first season in Japan, but his walks are cut in half. He's not allowed a home run yet. He's not allowing as many hits yet. He looks much more composed. It's almost as if he took, you know, what it looks like is he took a really long look at the things people could teach him here, and he's really absorbing it.
And
becoming a pitcher, because he was on fire today. Finished at 100.6 miles per hour.
I didn't see that. The one game I somehow wasn't on my TV and wasn't on the radar until it was over. Like 2-2,
struck out Neftali Soto in the ninth inning and missed bad at a fastball. But, you know, he hasn't been seeing, I don't think Neftali Soto has been seeing a lot of 100 mile an hour fastballs during his quarantine. So there was that. And the other thing I would mention is I heard an interesting comment this week, which was about Tatsunori Hara, the manager. And now if you remember, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, I did write about it in the blog when I talked about the, you know, what teams do when they have runners on first and third and two outs
mm-hmm.
in terms of running the bases, in terms of the stealing bases. And this past week, the Giants stole home in one of those situations. It was Kame
mm-hmm.
who did it. And Masahiro Kawai, the former Giants shortstop and very surprisingly strong Hall of Fame candidate, said that, you know, that's pure Hara. Hara's been really good at, I mean, he's been better at exploiting that situation than anybody, which is to say not really. I mean, he's better, but it's such a rare technique that it only makes a difference of like a, you know, half a run a okay. year.
Right,
one,
yeah.
One way or the other. But yeah, he's one of the better ones at it. And Kawhi said something interesting, which Kame was running when the catcher looked like he was going to throw, which set off an alarm bell. You know, that was supposed, that's supposedly the right thing. But if they are expecting the runner to go to the third, then you end up to come from third, then you end up with what happened to Oryx last year, was the catcher faking the throw and then letting the runner walk into an out.
Right. Right. Which is very Oryx thing to do, but yes, yes.
They didn't actually, they only, I think they only did that once last year. It seems that it happened every game, but that's what happens with Oryx. It's like, you just assume that all the bad things happen over and over because you see so many weird things on a daily basis. And
yeah, well, we will get to Oryx. We will get to Oryx. All right. Well, let's make a two seam transition and talk about Masahiro Tanaka's return to MPV. And I'll call this segment, Oh My Goodness, because his nickname is Ma-kun. On Saturday, the lowly Nippon Ham Fighters beat Rakuten 4-1, ending Tanaka's 28-game MPV regular season winning streak that dates back to August. I guess it started on the 26th of August, 2012.
That sounds right.
August 19th, 2012 at MetLife. Or whatever it was named at the time, Prince Seibu something or Seibu Dome or whatever they were calling it back in 2012 is when he had lost previous. And that was, again, 2012. And then the next week, starting on the 26th of August, 2012, was a game against the Fighters that he won. And then it was the Fighters who ended that streak on Saturday. Again, 4-1, Sho Nakata hits a home run, a two-run home run off of Tanaka in the first inning after a two-out walk. And then Kazunari Ishii hits a solo home run in the second inning. And that was it. Five innings pitched for Tanaka. Four hits, a walk, five strikeouts. Not a hideous outing. I kind of was thinking that he was – there were a couple of things that I was thinking about in this game.
Good.
Why did they pitch him against the Fighters without him throwing on the farm or doing any – I didn't hear about any extended simulated games or anything like that. Now, maybe he did throw them, but I didn't hear about it. And I just thought, well, it's the Fighters. They just figured, you know, they're in such bad situation right now. They're not playing well at all. They're not hitting. They weren't hitting for power. Yeah, this would be his warm-up game.
That's right. We've got the Fighters, so who needs Eastern League?
Yeah, we don't need to play in the minors. So that was the first thing I thought. And the second one was I wasn't so sure that Tanaka just didn't want this thing over with anyway, because it's a lot of pressure to pitch with these streaks. And not that he was throwing the game, but that he was working on some things. He was going to work out some kinks. And if he lost, he lost. And if he won, he won. And even then, he didn't get beat up or anything. I didn't expect him to go more than five innings in the first place. That was my expectation for him. That's where he finished the night. It wasn't a horrible outing. He just didn't win. They didn't score runs either. They had a chance, I think, late in the game to maybe hit a home run. They had two runners on. They could have hit a home run and tied the score. They didn't. That's part of the thing with the Eagles this year. They have been pretty much scoring more than I thought they would, but there are going to be some games where they have some inconsistency on the offensive side, and that was one of them. So, I didn't want to see the streak end. I'm sure a lot of fans didn't want to see the streak end. I had higher expectations for him in terms of runs allowed and certainly not giving up home runs to a guy in Nakata who had struggled and was scuffling, and that was his first home run of the season after, you know, not hitting a home run for 17 games. I believe he played in every game. I'm not sure. I'll look at it.
He did not play in one game because he had a swollen right eye.
Yes. Yes. I remember that. In fact, you talked about it on the show. So yeah, but he gets the home run. It was a mistake pitch and blah, blah, blah. It was still a good game. And then of course the Eagles end up winning the series as Takahisa Hayakawa just outfought the Fighters today going eight innings and holding them to one run. So good for the rookie lefty for the Eagles. But what were your takeaways from that game with Tanaka on Saturday?
Well, I thought his slider was really good, and I thought his splitter was decent, and he threw some good curveballs. The big problem was that his fastball was kind of hit and miss, and when he missed it,
location wise, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
mostly he really, up.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, of course, the problem is generally you get a lot of this in Japan. I've written about this, but pretty much whenever somebody makes a mistake, I don't care if they make a mistake down and in.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, if let's say that the pitcher throws every pitch below the belt, but he gets hit down and in, which is not a hard pitch, the announcers will say after the game, oh yeah, his pitches were high, because high pitches are bad pitches in Japan. So it's almost become a synonym for a bad pitch is to say that his pitches were up. In fact, they were criticized. One of the things the announcers were criticizing him for, or saying, look, he thinks he's in the major leagues throwing these high pitches. This is Tokyo Dome. They'll kill you. But again, that's right. The thing that is, you can throw high strikes or, good high fastballs are really, really, really hard to hit. But I mean, high as in pretty much where he was throwing them. He was a little disappointed when he did throw a high fastball intentionally and he wasn't getting called strikes at the top of the zone. So that looked like it annoyed him. But really he was trying to go inside. He was trying to jam Nakata inside, and he threw something just over the middle of the plate on the out towards the outer side and up a bit. And I didn't think it wasn't a terrible fastball, although it looked more like a cutter to me, had that sort of weird spin to it, but it was he hit it well enough that it was a Tokyo Dome home run. And, and 5 years ago, that's the only park it probably would have gone out in the Pacific League.
Mm.
But now that's no longer the case. That would have found the home run lagoon in Chiba, or the home run terrace in Fukuoka, or the little home run, whatever they call the home run seats in Sendai.
Yeah, off the bat, I wasn't sure it was a home run. So I was kind of surprised that it carried like that. But partly Tokyo Dome. Sure. And I think once I saw the replay, Tanaka knew it was a home run after it was launched.
Yeah, it wasn't, just barely over the wall. It cleared the wall by about 7 or 8 feet. But the one to Kazunari-ishi was another fastball that really didn't have any business being thrown where it was thrown. But, congratulations to them. What I got the impression of is that they sort of decided before the game that the fastball is the pitch we're going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically looking for him to throw the fastball, and Tanaka adjusted. And I thought the irony was that his game mimicked his major league career. Because he started out throwing his fastball and then he kind of just gave up on it.
Mm.
And I think it's his season progresses. And I think we're going to see kind of a microcosm of that, because after about 4 years in the majors, he sort of reinvented his four-seam fastball, and it sort of brought everything out. It brought the splitter out, and it brought the slider back. But after his surgery, he was very reluctant to throw, or after his non-surgery, after his elbow sprain, he was reluctant to throw the fastball, the four-seamer. So I think in the game, what happened was in the first inning, he threw probably 80% fastballs. And after that, he probably was throwing about 10% of the time. So he'll probably work on that, because he's just a workaholic in that stuff. So he'll settle down. I think the fastball will get better. His fastball command will get better. He'll find out what was going wrong with that. I expect he'll be pretty good moving forward.
Yeah, I expect him to work through something. In fact, I thought he was working through some of the issues.
Agreed.
With each inning. And he definitely got better after the second inning, or after the second home run.
Yeah.
And he started to, just keep his pitches in a tighter area and missed the zone. When he missed the zone, he wasn't missing, obviously, right away. He was getting the ball, I thought, where he wanted to. So he just had to work on that control.
Yeah, but I think at the other end, and the other thing was, well, as long as they're going to swing and miss at the slider, I'm just going to show the slider more.
Right. So the Eagles are scheduled to play against the Lions at home, meaning in Sendai, on Saturday, and that's probably when he'll get his next start. And it was still a fun game. It was a fun game to watch, and that was the first home win for the Fighters this season, but they were playing in their old home, not their current real home. So I don't know if it was a home game at Tokyo Dome, which they do a few times a year. But I don't know if that counts. I guess it's home on the schedule. But
oh, you got to.
Home is where the heart is. Then they did not win a home game.
Okay, which I got to ask, who the heck's heart is at Sapporo Dome?
Well, you know?
But even I have to think that they built, you know, the why do the Fighters play games at Tokyo Dome? And I know people, you know, in the Fighters, and they go like the Fighters players hate, you know, and Trey Hillman always hated the idea of playing games in Tokyo Dome. But you know why they play there is because it's a it's a self-esteem park. When you got a team that's hit when you've got
hey, homers.
Exactly. When you've got a team that's hit two home runs in 17 games, damn, you don't you want to play in Tokyo Dome too, so your hitters can feel like, hey, we can hit home runs. So they hit hit one today, and they hit three in the game against on Saturday's game. So they had four. They entered that series with two home runs, and they hit four in the last two games of the series. So self-esteem Tokyo, maybe that'll be the naming rights. Self-esteem Tokyo Dome.
Perhaps and perhaps not. Probably mostly not. But yeah, the Fighters, let's transition and talk about some of the struggling teams then a little bit. And the Fighters are one of those teams. And my goodness, they're not hitting for power. We talked about that. But I guess some of the ugly numbers, if you want to look into that, they're turn your head, look away from your iPhone.
That's right. Get the kids out of the room.
5-11 with three ties. That's a winning percentage of .313. They're not hitting. Their team batting average, if you can believe me. Again, I think last week I talked about the fact that had the Bay Stars not started with that long skid to start the season, people would have been talking about how the Bay Stars, how the Fighters didn't have but one win. Well, they have their five little wins right now, but they're only hitting 209 as a team. Now I've been tweeting about the Dragons and how bad their batting is. It's not that different, but they're even hitting 220 as a team. So if the Fighters are going to hit less than the Dragons, they're in some serious trouble. Now they both play in these big domes, and it's no surprise that neither team has power right now, or nobody's hitting for power regularly or consistently. But the Fighters are really looking bad. They're not. There's just so much going on that we talked about a little bit last week, touching on the different lineups, different players. Every day, you don't know who's going to be where or how. I don't know. If I were a Fighters fan, I don't know what I would do, because it's so hard to keep track of everything. I think you have to watch the farm games in the afternoon, and then watch the top team games at night, just so you know who's going to come up from the farm the next day and play and start, probably. Because that's what it seems that's happening. Anybody who does well in the farm just comes up and gets maybe not a start, but they get a spot on the roster, and then they get a shot soon after, and they're playing. The one good thing, though, another stat I saw, or another aspect I saw, is their rookie right-hander, Hiromi Ito, has a quality start and a high-quality start, yet he's 0-2.
What's a high-quality start? I'm not familiar with that.
You know, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it's the same innings, but either one run or fewer, and X number of strikeouts. But I'm not sure. I like that idea of a high quality start, because not all quality starts are made alike. But you know, if you go seven innings scoreless, or you go six innings and give up three runs, I know there's a difference there. So I guess you can say high quality start to separate those. But
that's a high quality perception.
Really? You don't like that? Stat guy doesn't like it.
Well, I mean, it's a lot. In other words, it's a lot like wins and saves. It's pretty on its own. It's a good useful counter. I mean, if you know that they're not all equal, yeah, fine. I mean, there's a big difference in a one-run save and a three-run save, and there's a big difference in a guy who doesn't throw a pitch and earns a win, and a guy who, you know, goes nine innings and allows one run and takes a loss. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a matter of, you know, I hate the stat or I like the stat. I think it's more a matter of knowing, you know, what the range of possible outcomes is.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I would just say, let's say a guy throws seven innings and strikes out 10, whereas another guy throws the same seven innings, but he has fewer strikeouts and more hits allowed. And so you want to maybe reward the guy with a different kind of a stat. Just don't put them in the same boat.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I understand the concept, motivation for wanting to do it. So, yeah.
Okay. So the Fighters are having their troubles, and so are the Bay Stars. Now they're streaking. We're going to be jumping leagues here back and forth, but the Bay Stars tied today to stop the losses, but they still have lost eight consecutive decisions. They managed to tie today. As I said before, Soto hit a home run. That was good for them, but I just don't think it's easy to go from whatever they were doing in terms of playing without their foreign guys and then all of a sudden drop those guys in and expect them to win games. I don't think it's that easy. We just saw that Tanaka came back to Japan for the first time in a long time, and he's going to have his challenges trying to beat these guys as well. It's just not that easy. So, like you said, Soto, you don't see many 100-mile-an-hour fastballs from the batting machine, you know. Maybe you can crank it up that high, but they're not moving the same way, they're not the same pitches, and they're not coming out of the hand the same way, and it's tough. So what's your takeaway from the Bay Stars? I just see a team that, again, you've got a new manager who is a former pitcher, and I just assume, okay, well, he's a pitcher, the pitching is going to be better, but I just don't think they have the arms. I don't think it's fair to compare what Daisuke Miura as the new manager is doing to what Alex Ramirez did as the manager, because they're using different parts. And again, not all the full complement of players that hasn't been the case for the Bay Stars for a while. So they're just getting those guys back, and they're still missing a big part of their bullpen in Edwin Escobar. I just don't think it's the same. So I'm not going to compare, but I do think there's just been a lack of inspiration in some parts, but you can't inspire people who are not that good to be better than they are. And that's what I think is just a personnel situation right now, especially with the pitchers.
So I'm going to expect you to give up on me, John.
Because?
I've reached my limit.
I expect more out of you, Jimmy.
Yeah, I think it's a less useful comparison, because we've only played 17 or 18 games.
That's true too.
And they played 5 years under Ramirez. So, I mean, we can see differences. I know they're trying to do different things. They're bunting a lot, which Ramirez was not a big fan of. The bullpen has been, well, I mean, Ramirez, and rightly so, was roasted for sticking with Yasuaki Yamasaki when his pitches, you know, it was sort of like, I can't say his pitches were worse. They just looked worse to me. So that's just I can't quantify it. So I'm not going to try to, but they didn't look like they were that good. And was more of a problem than, you know, his head wasn't right. Is that he wasn't, you know, his head might have been the problem, but it was resulting in poor stuff from my standpoint. So it wasn't a case of like, well, he'll snap out of it and he'll feel better. He was just throwing a lot of bad pitches. He's thrown better pitches this year. He looks like he's he has this stuff right now where it looks like he can be back, but he's not there. Guys, in addition to the loss of Edwin Escobar, Kenta Ishida, has not looked good in the bullpen, and he was a rock under Ramirez. So those things have been a problem. And of course, the other problem has been the starting pitching has been kind of a 50-50 proposition. They've had surprisingly good starts, and they've had just some gosh darn awful starts. The offense has been also quite hit and miss. Seems like the top of the lineup has been consistently good.
Right.
With the Shugo Maki batting.
Rookie.
Rookie Shugo Maki and Daiki Sekine. And Keita Sano's been hitting fairly well. So those guys at the top have been doing it pretty much from the bottom. Has not been that good has been sort of the weaker part, but that was the same under Ramirez too. Toshiro Miyazaki has been, I guess, okay. Nothing, you know, about normal. But all in all, the offense has not been able to make up for the inconsistent starting pitching and the
relief. And relief pitching. Yeah, they just haven't really been good on a lot of fronts, and they're winning. They're 3-15. I tweeted to someone the other day that, yes, well, as bad as we tease the Oryx Buffaloes, they have twice as many wins as the Bay Stars at the moment, and that's still the case. The winning percentage of 167. Their quality start rate is 19%, so they're not getting good quality starts from the guys who start the games. And there's just a lot of ugliness and a lot of, you know, their run differential. I forgot to mention the Fighters run differential minus 38 at the moment. And yes, the Bay Stars is more than 40. It's minus 43. Yeah. So
I guess we did have the question, you know, what's going to happen when, you know, we answered the question, what's going to happen when Soto and Tyler Austin come back, which is, you know, we didn't know, but the answer was, let's put Shugo Maki at second, where he played in the spring, and I thought Taiki Sekine was going to go maybe back to the farm, but I guess when you're hitting 350 or something and you've got speed and you can play defense, they decided to make him part of a center field platoon combination with Masayuki Kuwahara. So that's the answer to that.
And again, Tyler Austin and Neftali Soto, they're dealing with a time difference and still probably adjusting the competition and all that stuff. So I think once they're all in a competitive environment and they get their players together, I think there's a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, sure.
They're going to have to get through it, just like the Dragons are going to have to get through.
Maybe, it could be a few things. It could be also, you know, as you know, we talked about, it could be the fielders. The pitchers we always talked about before the show, you know, the pitchers being under so much pressure to pitch with, you know, questionable run support, knowing that the big guys are well, sure. I mean, Shugo Maki seems to hit a home run every other game, but other than him, it's pretty much a scratch and, you know, scratch your head and see, you know, shake the tree and see if a run pops out every now and then.
Hashtag high heat.
Ooh, there's one.
Exactly. Okay, you got one. How come I didn't? Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about something positive, and that's the Hanshin Tigers. And they've been surprisingly great, and they're scoring consistently. They're pitching well. The defense is good. They're preventing runs on that front. They're getting considerably steady play from rookie Takumu Nakano at shortstop, and he has been quite a nice surprise for them. They're playing well. I think working in concert, when the team's not hitting, the pitching is good. And when the team's not pitching well, the hitting is good. And even today, where they pitched well early on and they hit well early on and the bullpen kind of let them down, they still managed to pull out the game, a 10-7 victory over the Swallows, who tried to come back. So I just really like, again, I was going to pick this team to win the Central League. I just felt like something was going to go wrong, and I just didn't have the guts to do it. And we still have a long way. I still think the Giants, like I said, if they get one of their new prize import players to pop here, they're going to make a run, or they're right there anyway. So they're going to put a lot of pressure on Hanshin as the season goes along. But I just really like what I'm seeing from Hanshin. And Joe Gunkel won his fourth game today. He doesn't have any losses, and he looks like he might be able to run away with the with the Salomon Award, shall we say, the early front
four runner. Games. Sure, why not? Let's
just why not? Four games. He's definitely pitcher of the month, right?
Yep.
for the Central League. So far, he's going to have one more start here. But I just like all they're doing the little things too. You know, they're making those little plays, and if they have an error or they have a mistake or they do something where they don't get the out or something happens on defense or they don't get the bunt down, they're making up for it, or at least they're staying in the game close enough to where they can have somebody either hit a home run or get a big hit for them. And Teruaki Sato isn't mashing and killing it, but he's doing enough and he looks good. He looks decent in right field. I still want to see more, but I just really like all the things I've seen from Hamshin, and I know the fans must be happy. What have you seen?
Well, I've seen a lot of things going right, and the Tigers are one of these teams, and I give them a lot of stick as I do the Giants for putting so much extra pressure on the players, mm-hmm. and you know, and letting the media sort of run the pressure game on the players. You know, we're not playing up to the media's standards. I think the Giants probably are worse in that their standards are higher than the media's. But, you know, it's like, who cares about the media? You're not meeting my standards. So, you know, he only will pitch six innings with five strikeouts. We expected more from you. I mean, Tatsunori Hara gets like that. But the point is they put a lot of pressure on the players, and that causes things that often causes problems that shouldn't be problems. I mean, it also instills a sense of urgency or a sense of seriousness to the mm-hmm. equation, you know, that we're not messing around. Everybody's got to play for the team. That's important. But sometimes it gets to be too much. And the Tigers are one of these teams that often has very good players, especially with the imports and with young players who they build up hopelessly high expectations for, and then sort of bash them when they don't live up to the expectations.
Mm.
So there's a farm team is littered with broken expectations in the Hanshin Tigers. So that's I kind of expect things to go wrong, but I'm very happy with the job that manager Akihiro Yano is doing. He's a pretty even-keeled guy. It's like he's so much like he was as a player, you know. That
just poised, yeah.
Yeah, poised and good-natured, and not, you know, he's, you know, obviously frustrated when the team does stupid stuff, but you know, the analysts made a big deal about the number of Tigers errors last year, and of course the team cares about that. But yeah, so one of the guys, it looks like he's going to be the next casualty of the high expectation mill, is a Seiya Kinami.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Takumu Nakano is going to get his job this year, and then when the Tigers decide that Takumu Nakano is the second best shortstop in team history, then he'll probably crumble under the expectations next year. So, but we've seen this cycle over and over again. So I typically expect Hanshin Tigers fans, I typically expect them to fail. But I'm glad they're doing well. It seems like everything's going well. It seems, and then when you have like a wonderful game like they had from Shintaro Fujinami on Friday, when he basically, you know, he won 2-0 and he hit the two-run homer. You know, he's not pitching great all the time, but he's pitching more and more composed. Like, you know, like he belongs there. He's looking, you know, he's gradually I think he's building up his confidence. And Yano's basically been letting him, you know, move forward in baby steps. And this was even after Yano banished him to the farm team for being late for practice too many times this spring. So,
yeah. I like what they're doing. They're stealing a lot of bases. They're leading the Central League in stolen bases. They're leading the Central League in home runs. Their run differential is 40 plus 45. That's incredible. They're, you know, getting a lot of quality starts. They just look, the errors are still high. I think they have 12 errors. They're leading.
Yeah.
Yeah, not leading their second highest.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you're in first place,
nobody cares when you're winning.
Exactly. As soon as they lose, as soon as you know they get a four-game losing streak, they'll say, "Well, that's because they're leading the league in errors."
Yeah, I got to clean those errors up. Yep. Yep. All right, let's make a seamless transition here. And Jim has found some information about bunts early on this season, and he wants to inform us. So what did you find?
Well, it wasn't so much information as, I mean, it was things I already knew. And then, you know, the pattern changed was basically we had a situation in Japan where we had two teams that were leading last in their leagues in the percentage of bunts. So we had the DeNA BayStars under Alex Ramirez, who were like last in the league in sacrifice bunt percentage every year he managed. And the Lions, since before Hatsuhiko Tsuji came in, were the last in the Pacific League in frequency of bunts. And all of a sudden, the Lions are one of the bunting teams. Of course, we knew the BayStars were going to be a bunting team because Daisuke Miura's farm team led the Eastern League in bunts last year. So we expected that. That was, you know, one of the criticisms of Alex Ramirez. You know, he doesn't bunt enough, or at least that was part of the praise of Miura. He's trying to win, and we know he's trying to win because he bunts a lot.
Just ridiculous.
You laugh, but it's absolutely true. I mean, you hear it.
Because it's ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous to verbalize it, but that's what people are saying.
Well, they say, yeah. I heard him say it this week. So, Akihiko Oya on Pro Yaku News was saying, well, we know the Lions are really trying to score hard because they're bunting at every opportunity. They're not waiting for the home. And that's the whole thing in Japan is it becomes a moral judgment. Teams that bunt a lot are better because they're more invested in winning or somehow. I do understand it, but it still kind of turns my stomach every time I hear it. But the thing is, that I think the thing with the Lions is, and I did write about this on my blog I did ask about the Lions bunting on my blog in the paid content somewhere this week, is why they're bunting and, you know, why the change. And it seems what happens is the Lions have may be going through a phase now. Okay. They're not the 2006 Nippon Ham Fighters who suddenly started bunting a lot. You know, Trey Hillman he denies it now, but he hated the sacrifice bunt with a passion when he came to Japan. And all of a sudden in 2006, he became I always liked the bunt.
Well, I remember him explaining the fact that why would we play for one run or try to get one run when we didn't have the pitching staff to hold down teams if we were
exactly. Well, that was the kind of the story after 2006. Before that, it was why play for, you know, why throw your runs away, because he was a on base percentage guy.
Or throw the outs away.
Yeah, why would you throw exactly? Why would you throw outs away with sacrifices bunts? But then after the fact, and sorry Trey, but this is, you know, we have differences of your opinion, and you know more about it than I do, but the explanations changed after the fact. After they won a pennant, it was, well, we knew we had the pitching to hold it up. Now that may be true, but it doesn't answer for the fact that, you know, he hated the sacrifice bunt before he had the pitching. He hated in principle before he had that strong pitching and defense team. Right. But what I see from the Lions is a belief that if they bunt, they can win games 1-0. They can win games 2-1 with their starting pitchers. And then, of course, the other side of the equation, which, you know, I went into. So it's not really a change in the value of the starting of the sacrifice bunt, but I think a realization by Hatsuhiko Tsuji, the manager, is that their team's different than it has been the past 5 years. Also, Hotaka Yamakawa is on, you know, he's hurt. Tonosaki, the great second baseman, is hurt. And Takumi Kuriyama, their DH, is hurt. So they're not going to be scoring runs. So yeah. I think it's a case of, this is the best thing for us to do right now, because I was shocked. I watched a couple of Lions games. I'm going, what's he bunting Genda for so often? When did he start, you know, losing his mind? But I think what happened is, you know, he made a decision that based on this situation, that was his best option. And I respect that. The last thing, so I write about that in depth, and I'll get you that the name of that story here in a moment. But the other thing that was interesting is this: about 5 minutes later, they're talking about the Chunichi Dragons and how none of the guys can hit, and they've got no power. And they said, that's the problem with this team. They've got no power. It makes them have to bunt. So I guess bunting is noble.
Noble.
If it's a choice. And it's not noble if you have to bunt because you got nobody who can hit.
All right. So yeah, don't go down fighting. Go down bunting.
Well, it's more like if you choose to bunt because it's a philosophy, that's okay. But if you choose to bunt because your team is lousy, that's not okay. Okay. Computer anyway, say, so that's that. Okay.
What?
It's called Musings. Yeah. Some of the, if you look up Musings on my blog, that's where I write just stuff that you know, occurs to me over the days. So that's paid content on jballallen.com, and I hope you enjoy it.
Okay. All right, let's go to fielding questions.
Hashtag high heat.
All right, this came from Twitter. This is from Igoru, our old buddy. And he says, Nakajima, the Oryx Buffalo's manager, is using Adam Jones as a pinch hitter, but the team is lacking power apart from Masataka Yoshida. And Steven Moya is injured. What do you think about this? Hashtag high heat. So I think just what Claudio and others said in the PL prediction show is coming to fruition. And that is this team can't seem to figure things out. And Adam Jones, to me, I don't think he's really played enough consistently early on. Other than the first couple weeks of the season, he's just been kind of in and out of the lineup. But he doesn't seem to me to be making the kind of contact that I think they were expecting. He looks more like a guy who now, in his second season, instead of feeling more comfortable, he looks like a player who's gotten more information, and now he realizes the more information he gets, the more he realizes he doesn't know enough, or he has a lot more to learn, you know, that it's just confusing. And so there are, you know, different pitchers this season from the last year. We've got younger guys coming up. You look at the Cebu Lions. They're throwing different guys out there. I just think he is just not able to make the consistent contact they like. So now it's a pinch hitting role for him, which, again, to me, I think you play him. If you invest in him, you just got to play him and live with the results. Moya was hitting well, not so much for power, but then he had that incident we spoke about last week, and I know he was deactivated for injury. I don't remember.
He fouled a pitch off his foot.
Yeah, so you know, that was unfortunate, but I got the idea they were glad that he fouled a pitch off his foot, and they could deactivate him after that base running blunder. So, you know, there are guys out there who are decent, but I think the longer you put them out there and the more we see of them, the more that we see that they're a liability in the field. Kodai Sano is a guy, and I mentioned him, I think, last year when he made some kind of goofy play in center field. But he has flashed for the Oryx Buffaloes and hit a home run in the upper deck at Kyocera Dome this past week. He looks much better, but there's just still that situation. I think the manager, I think Nakajima, he has to figure out, like I said in the past, I think we know the results of things because we see what happens in the play, but we don't really know what the plan was to begin with. And I think, and the strategies that go into the game. So I think as a new manager, he's looking at the players right now and saying, okay, this is what the plan was, and this was the execution, and how is that going? And I think he's still evaluating what guys are doing in terms of executing the plan. And I think he knows what they can do, but are they going up there and are they going out each day and executing defensively? Are they executing offensively and doing the little things? And I think he's still learning about that part of the team, even though he had some, he had a lot of the players last year, and he played with them at the end once he took over. But I still think there's an adjustment period. You've got Keita Nakagawa, I think, who had been banished for part of last season. He's back, and they keep playing him all over, mostly I think at third base. But
yep.
There's just a lot of new things. It's just a weird team anyway. I can't get angry right now at the manager. I don't think it's his fault. I'm not blaming him. I think he's still searching and groping and trying to find out what is going to work. And like we've even seen Yuma Mune, who's a really good defensive player wherever they put him, and he's gotten a few hits for them. But I think if he plays every day at one position, you're not going to like the results. I think he's kind of a guy you just plug in as a utility guy, and I think they're just still looking. What do you think, Jim?
I think the answer is, Adam Jones needs to hit. And, really simple. And I think that the news that Stefan Romero is tuning up, he's back in Japan and now he's working out on the farm team, is music to their ears. A guy who we should have re-signed 2 years ago. But we had Adam Jones come in, and I don't want to rag on Adam Jones. I don't know what the issues are, and I don't pretend to know. I'm sure he's taking it very seriously, because that seems to be the guy he is. But it ain't nothing really has worked yet. As far as Oryx in general, the problem is I cannot tell you, but I can tell you that it's a very frustrating issue. I mean, Yutaro Sugimoto is just a big slugging guy, and they're playing him a lot. And he's proving to be a better hitter than he is a fielder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a liability out there.
Well, a little bit, but here's the thing. Oryx's defense is, I think, not as bad as it looks. It's just that the look is so annoying is what it is. I don't think, it's like, when you watch the game, you see so many plays where the announcers say, oh, that's a mental mistake that cost him. And you look at the game and you see it didn't really cost him, but it's the word I used is it doesn't inspire confidence. I think that's the biggest problem is Oryx's defense does not inspire confidence in the pitching. Otherwise, the other thing that I really, since we're on Oryx for a second, the thing that caught my eye today was the batting order, which was Masataka Yoshida batting second, which of course I'm good with, and Yoichi Adachi batting third.
Yeah.
Which yeah, I actually
think they came on, but I didn't notice that. Yeah.
Yeah, which I like because generally the number three is really one of the least important parts of the offense. I mean, it's the part where you could put a pretty bad, you can hide a pretty bad hitter batting third. It's counterintuitive, but that's pretty much the way lineups work. It's just the way they come around. So I'm curious why they did that. And I'm wondering if somebody in the analytics department didn't say, well, we got to put this guy somewhere and he's killing us everybody where else. And he's not a terrible player. And maybe if we put him in the third spot where we're actually hiding him, he'll think it's a promotion and he'll feel better about himself. I don't know. So that was kind of interesting. It's very atypical, although maybe some announcer will be fooled into thinking, oh, Masataka Yoshida is really short. So maybe he's a good number two hitter.
Well, there's some food for debate. The three hole is the place where you can hide a bad hitter. But
relatively speaking, it's the one where there's the least gain by putting a good hitter there.
Okay.
Compared to and that number two is much number two. It's much better to put a good. It's better to put a good hitter at number two than three. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Look, the one thing, and I know you hate these things, but I think it really applies to the Buffaloes in that you hate that guy who gets the bloop single game-winning hit. I shouldn't say hate, but you despise that he becomes the hero, and that's the people, that's the person the media focuses on. But, it's also the opposite of that is the pitcher who gives up the screaming line drive that catches a defensive player.
Yeah.
For the final out, or somebody makes a great defensive play, like we had in the Dodger game today, where a guy makes a running catch and ends the game. I mean, like, I've always said it's all important, but you can't forget those little plays, because if you don't make them in baseball, you don't win the game.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I'm not bragging on it. I mean, if the guy gets a blooper, I mean, at least you put the bat on the ball.
Well, I'm saying the results, again, are the results, whatever happens. But I don't think a guy, again, giving up a screaming line drive that just happens to get caught is a save. You know, I don't really want to reward that guy with a save, but that's what you got to do, because that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, people forget about that hard hit ball. They only look at the fact that you won and that guy saved it and somebody.
True. I mean, I looked at the Oryx game today, and Tyler Higgins walked four guys.
Yeah, that was going to be my point. They didn't get those outs that they needed to get to seal the game.
And really the cost was, I don't know. You know, they battled it first, and I didn't see the outs they didn't get. But, you know, the first two guys, at least he had a chance to walk them after.
To play that tied the score was the
well, yeah. But that was, out. Yeah, well, that was it. That was it.
Yeah, that was a good play. I mean, they.
I mean, Adachi stopped the ball, because if he doesn't stop the ball, then two runs are going to score on that play.
Yeah. Yeah, the point is not making the plays that can win you games, which is you're getting the ball over the plate as a pitcher.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And making the catches, you know, whatever it is. They had the lead when they went into the inning.
Hmm.
They didn't when they came out.
Yeah, he couldn't throw the pitches as well.
Well, I mean, no matter how it goes, it's just the Buffalo seem to struggle to gain control of those things. They have struggled for years now.
Yeah, but I think they have a smaller margin for error than a lot of teams. You know, it's funny, because you said something about, you know, that when about the Tigers, you know, that when their pitching is weaker, their hitting steps up, and when their hitting is weaker, the pitching steps up. And very, you know, what you hear so often from players, well, we need to do both at the same time. So when we hit, we don't pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the team, that's the bad team.
Right.
That need, in order to win, they have to be at the top of their game in both pitching and hitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the Buffaloes. For the Buffaloes to win consistently, they need basically to be at the very maximum level of performance, or at least there's a perception that they do. Again, I'm not a believer that I'm a believer that they're bad, but I'm not a believer that they have to be bad.
Yeah, we all said, I think, on the prediction show, they have talent. We respect the players that they have out there, and we think that they have enough talent to finish in the playoffs, but they just haven't proven it. And this is part of it, getting, you know, sealing the deal when you have a chance. And it's not going to happen in every one run game, so I'm not going to look at one game and make a decision.
No.
But it just consistently happens with this team. We got to go. It's been a long show. You have anything coming up?
I do not, but always check out jballallen.com. And if you like what's on there, please subscribe so you can get full access to all the, you know, all the fun stuff.
Okay, all the fun stuff. And we are looking for some more fun stuff, some more questions. Thank you, Igoru, for the question. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions and MP3s via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or hit us up on the Facebook page and leave a message there. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you masked at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.